You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Are you ready?
Always.
Guys, you know who's here. Ben Snoor's here. Welcome to the Full Blast Podcast. I'm Jeff Fader. And before we get into it, Ben, find out what he's been up to because it's been pretty exciting. Let's take care of a little bit of business. First things first, my friends at Broadbeck Ironworks, makers of the 2x72 grinder. This is a grinder for knife makers, metal workers. If you're removing material, this is the machine for you. All the attachments, all the grinders, all the parts. It's fantastic. And if you go to BroadbeckIronworks.com, put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you'll get 10% off everything. Many thanks to those guys, and also many thanks to my friends at Evenheat, manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com and see what the fuss is about. This stuff is awesome. If you're heat treating, if you're making knives, hammers, tools that need to be hardened, if you're doing ceramics, glass, this is it for you. Ain't nothing better than Evenheat. So many thanks to my friends at Evenheat, and many thanks to my friends at Maritime Knife Supply. MaritimeKnifeSupply.com for all your knife making needs, belts, abrasives, steels, kilns, forges, press, heat treating ovens, all that stuff. Couple things about Lawrence. He is unbelievable. He has a couple scholarships going on. I just got to meet this young man, Jacob Stout, who got the scholarship for the New England School of Metalwork, all for Maritime Knife Supply. He's going to be working with the Center for Metal Arts, too. Maritime Knife Supply is unbelievable. And if you're interested in doing the Knife Talk build-along with Damasteel, all the steel comes from Maritime Knife Supply. So if you want to get involved with the build-along, go to MaritimeKnifeSupply.com and check it out. Maritime Knife Supply is unbelievable involved. Unbelievable. He's involved with the metalworking community, the knife-making community. He's got whatever you need. So that is good enough for me, and that should be good enough for you. So go support my friends over at Maritime Knife Supply. Next are my friends at Trojan Horse Forge, makers of the Staberl knife finishing vise. Their vices are built in the heart of Texas, and not only that, they also have T4 Sentinel Oil, which is a dynamite oil for your steel and all that stuff. And they sell knives, and they teach classes. So go to TrojanHorseForge.com. And check it out with those guys and the knife finishing vices. They're getting those squared away. And when they are, 10% off with Full Blast 10. Many thanks to my friends at Trojan Horse Forge. And I got an exciting news from my friends at Baker Forge. BakerForge.com or Baker Forge and Tool on Instagram for all that exotic steel. You know, copper, my bronze, my sand, my all that great stuff that comes out great. All this steel that comes annealed and it comes to your house, and then you can get the cores in the middle, and it's really exotic and it's really easy to work with. And they have something very special. What they have is a new proprietary etching called Gator Piss, but that's not it. Gator Piss is unbelievable, and I didn't think it'd get any better. But they have two new variations of Gator Piss that are available to pre-order on April 18th. That's right. You have two new Gator Pisses. You have regular Gator Piss. You have Gator Piss Heavy, which is specifically formulated for carbon Damascus and copper Damascus. It's designed to give you a stunning contrast without dulling the nickel finish. Perfect for tight patterns, mosaics, copper mice, wherever you don't want the acid effect, sensitive alloys, or muddying your patterns. That's regular Gator Piss. Gator Piss Heavy is a unique variation of the original blend with much more stronger, powerful etches designed for high-volume repeatability on most high-carbon steels and excels in production etching environment. Great for that blackout etch on Damascus and even mono steel. And if that wasn't enough, that you got Gator Piss, Gator Piss Heavy, and now you got Gator Piss Max. Gator Piss Max is for stainless steel Damascus. Stainless Damascus steels designed for high contrast and depth etches in one go. No need to heat and gas out your shop like the past etching methods. Get a draw dopping etch with high contrast like never before. Unbelievable. So you got Gator Piss, Gator Piss Heavy, Gator Piss Max. Ain't gonna be better than that. And it's got a discount. It's got a discount on the pre-orders only. So go check out BakerForge.com, and April 18th is where you want to get involved in that pre-order. Next are my friends, and then if you want to get your regular Gator Piss, get it, you can also get a Texas Farrier Supply. TexasFarrierSupply.com is unbelievable, and if you go to Texas, oh, by the way, with Baker Forge, it's full blast, gets you 10% off. Just everything, lets you know all that stuff. Texas Farrier Supply, and just to let you know, I'm not confusing, you don't have to write this down, go to wherever you're listening to this, and all the information is there. Texas Farrier Supply for all your farrier stuff, blacksmith stuff, knife making stuff, it's really great. And Rhino Wet, get your Rhino Wet there. You can go to TexasFarrierSupply.com, put the promo code KNIFETALK10, you get 10% off everything. I love those guys, and I'm for it, 100%. Next, my friends at Total Boat. I just used some totalboat.com/fullblast, and I got a deal. I got, not only did I get myself a bargain, but I got myself some street cred. For all your adhesive paints, primers, polishing compounds, stuff is awesome. I use their two-part epoxy exclusively, and I have great results. I love their UV cure resin. I love that, and I love their CA glue. So go to totalboat.com/fullblast and use a great high performance epoxy for all that, you know, stuff you're putting together. You know what I'm saying? Next are my friends at GL Hansen and Sons. It's g.l.hansenandsons on Instagram. You go to gcarta.bigcartel.com. Gcarta is a unique composite of natural fibers and fabrics mixed under epoxy with pressure and heat. Bofa, Ripple Cut, Tuxini, Mahi Mahi, Radio Worm, Gcarta, Pheasant, Colorama, Hoopla, all that amazing stuff and razzle dazzle for your project. It's handle scales. Stuff is amazing. I just cleaned one up to go to a good customer of mine, and its stuff is awesome. Everybody loves the Gcarta, and now customers are starting to request it by name. So that's unbelievable. And I'm a huge fan of Greg and Mikey, and it's another small business doing great stuff. I want to thank my friends at Tormek. I had a great time with Carl last week. Tormek_sharpening on Instagram, Tormek.com. Celebrating 50 years in business with the Black TH sharpening system. If you're going to Blade Show, go to the Tormek booth and say hi to Carl, say hi to Sebastian, and anybody else who's there. Tormek's great. You can see it for yourself. That amazing portable water cooled sharpening system. I have like a pile of them, and I love them. Definitely check out Tormek.com. I appreciate the hell out of those guys. If you're in Australia, you need to get yourself some supplies. Go to NordicEdge.com.au. That's Nordic_Edge on Instagram. They have all the stuff you need. Their file guides are unbelievable, all their products. But also, they also teach classes. They teach blacksmithing, spoon carving, leatherwork. It's awesome. And if you're in Australia and you want to learn about this stuff, definitely go to Nordic Edge and you take some classes from some really, really great guys. And I really appreciate Bjorn and Sausage Man Forge and everybody over at NordicEdge.com.au. They're just amazing. And the fact that they're teaching great classes in Australia is really important. And the fact that they're selling products that you need is really important, too. I'm hoping to see them at Blade Show as well. And I want to thank my friends at Phoenix Abrasives, PhoenixAbrasives.com. They supply abrasive products for all your applications, knife making, metal fabrication, glass fabrication, floor sanding, all that stuff, belts, grinding, cutting discs, flap discs. It's great. And I get a lot of their stuff from them, and their price is really good. And nowadays when prices are fluctuating, you want a company that's going to give you the best price. And not to mention, you can get 10% off if you use FB10 at checkout. FB10 gets you 10% off. So I'm a huge fan of Phoenix Abrasives, and I'm very appreciative to them and all that stuff. I want to thank my next guest, who I love when he comes on here. Very exciting. Just off a huge contest. You know Ben Snore. Ben, how are you?
I am recovering.
Recovering from what?
From the contest and all the practice and just ready to get my life back on track.
Now, we've talked about this before. I think I mentioned it when I had Riley Kirkpatrick on a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. You had been sending me messages. You competed with the world champion blacksmiths.
World championship blacksmiths.
Tell me more about the competition.
All right. So this is the first year that they had it in Amarillo. And, of course, it's close. And I've always competed in novice. And you get three novice contests. And then you are bumped up into the open. And I'm a No matter how you do. You get three. And it took me 4 years to do three of them. But, you know, I'm not a horseshoer. I don't eat, breathe, sleep, all this shit. And right. So... it was going to be the first one of the season. It's right, you know, it's an hour from the house, so of course I've got to do it. And the judge was John McNerney. He's Yukon Forge on Instagram. Right. And one of the main reasons why I wanted to enter this was part of the contest was tongs. Okay. And I love making tongs. And so they had on day one, you had to make a pair of tongs out of lollipops and then this enormous draft shoe. They gave you 17 and a half inches of half by inch and a quarter that then had to be stretched out to like 18 and a half inches to make this shoe.
Could you explain what the lollipop is?
The lollipop is a piece of 3/4 round and you have 2.5 inches of that 3/4 round on the end and then it's drawn out into a 3/8 rein.
Okay, so
only have to forge the business end, you know, okay. All the grabby part and then the little shoulder where it blends into the reins and make them fit and look good. And so I have been practicing my ass off. And then also in preparation for this, I made a shitload of these lollipops to sell through Wellshod because not very many of these guys have, you know, a power hammer that they can run these out on. And I just absolutely, it's awful. It's awful production work. I made something like 250 pairs of these.
Oh, my God. Out of three, you got a couple sticks of 3/4, and then you just kind of like.
Yep, cut them into 7.5, 7-inch pieces, you know, and you section off 2.5 inches for your lollipop, and then you run out the sucker stick.
And you know what? You've done now that you've officially done it. I mean, all these guys are getting to the lollipops. You're making all the lollipops too.
Yeah. I kind of was the main supplier for everybody to practice.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not something that Wellshod stocks are going to have all the time. But whenever something like this happens and people need them, you got to capitalize on that.
You know what, though? It is a very, very great idea, especially considering when I had Riley on, we were talking about the fact that a lot of times that farriers don't necessarily have a lot of use for power hammers because mm-hmm. when they're forging horseshoes, you can't bump the middle of with a
there
power
isn't
hammer.
Squat you can do with a power hammer.
If you're a farrier, you can't do shit. I mean,
the only thing you can really, I'd say, effectively do is say you've got some half by inch and a quarter and you need 3/8 by 1, you can build
right.
that.
Right.
But other than that, there's making tools. There's some other aspects
of
to
course.
It. But, you know,
but
not your day-to-day work.
Yeah, but your standard guy ain't going to really need a
power
hammer.
Yeah, you're not going to turn on the power hammer to flatten your shoe out.
That's why it's so great that you're doing out the reins because you're giving these guys the opportunity. Because, I mean, from the boss all the way to the jaws, those farrier tongs are so far more complex than your standard just like... you know, forging out the jaws for a pickup tong.
Yeah.
So when you're practicing, how many pairs of tongs did you practice and make?
Maybe 18, 19 pair.
Oh, my God. And how long?
We started out, you know, trying to... I think the first pairs were like 35 minutes. And we, you know, quickly got faster than that. And by the end, kind of before the contest, we had them sized. And I also, you know, can't say enough about John Harshbarger that owns Well Shot. He was my striker throughout this whole thing.
Amazing.
Made a whole lot of trips out here to the ranch, you know, went out of his way to help me practice. And I just can't say thank you enough to him. But by the time we were did our last practice, kind of getting ready for the contest, we had them riveted and sized and ready to work in about 22, 23 minutes.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And you're forging all the you're forging it. Now, when you have a striker, is the striker working with you a lot on?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we practiced so much. Like, we didn't have to talk throughout the whole process. He knew every step of the way. You know, all I had to do is stick out my hand, and he had the right tool ready for me to, you know, punch the hole or texture the jaws or set down between the boss and the reins. I mean, it was we worked like a well-oiled machine.
That's the one thing that a lot of people don't I think that's one thing that a lot of people don't realize is that practice and repetition creating this relationship where words don't have to be said.
Oh, I mean, you can't say enough for it.
And then that makes the efficiency all that much better.
So much better. You know, and that's something like another guy in the contest, Chase Roybal, he's from over in Albuquerque. He came over the day before the contest to go stay the night at our buddy Weston's house. And Weston was going to be striking through him throughout the whole process. So they were able to at least get a few runs in to where Weston had a pretty good idea of what Chase's program was.
Wow.
But, I mean, they still weren't going to be as efficient as John and I, who'd been practicing for 2.5 months straight.
Oh, my. So if you're all right, so in the 2.5 months of practicing, how often are you practicing on the tongs?
The tongs maybe twice a week.
Okay.
And then shoes, I was kind of doing those, you know, some of them by myself, and then that draft shoe mainly whenever I was practicing with John, because he knows how to build them really well. And so, you know, every time we practice, like, you know, there's something that, you know, one more little thing that I needed to know to kind of take him to the next level. And then, you know, day of the contest, you build this shoot. Like, you blow through your tongs. You have them sized ready to go in, like, 21, 22 minutes. You move on to the shoe. You build this really nice shoe, and you have more time. I had more time than I thought than I've ever had at the very end, and it was like, what do I do with this? So I go over to the rasp or to the file, and I start rasping on it, and I'm like, there's something I'm forgetting. And I completely forgot to make sure the shoe was flat. And it was really out of level, like a half Wow. inch out of level, which is really bad.
So bring me back. So, I mean, it sounds to me like in terms of the practice, and I've said this for years, is that this sounds to me more like you're more of an athlete than a craftsperson at this point.
I would definitely say so in this.
And then how many other people were competing in your heat, I guess you'd call it?
There are 10 people going at a time. So there's 10 forges on the WCB trailer. You know, there's 5 down each side. And then there were, I think, I'll have to pull it up. I know there was something like 86 people entered.
Holy cow.
And that includes, I think, 16 or 18 novices. So there was, you know, like 70 people in the open class, and then there was more, you know, there's always more Cat 1s than anything else.
So what was your goal? What was your goal? Like,
my goal I wanted top 5 tongs. You know, it'd be nice to win, but there's just certain things I have against me, largely due to lack of experience, that, you know, it'd be nice to win, but I just can't be as efficient on the shoes as those other top guys.
Huh.
And so that, you know, just being efficient on the shoes. So I got my tongs done 21, 22 minutes, but then in between every heat on that draft shoe, I'm rasping my ass off on the tongs, trying to make everything, you know, kind of blend, give it some sex appeal. Just make it look as nice as possible. But those guys, have got such good cardio from doing this, and they're so efficient building these shoes that they basically have got twice the amount of time in the vise filing on their tongs, and they're five times more efficient while they're doing it.
Yeah. Well, but that's also experience.
Yeah. No, I am tickled to death with how I did. And so I did that, and then, you know, the other aspect of it is, even though I'm not a horseshoe shoer, is if you do well enough on your top, your first 2 days, and then you also have the match play where you've got to build this roadster shoe, which is a piece of 1/2 by 1, and you've got to build two knobs on the end of the heels and then turn a shoe. They started the timeout at 12 minutes. And you're going head-to-head against another guy where you look at the foot, you've got to determine how much material you need, you go cut your material, time starts, you got 12 minutes to make that shoe, and then you've got to build a better shoe that fits that foot better than the other guy.
Oh, boy.
And I had only practiced that twice. I didn't really care a whole lot about it, but I did a lot better than I'd anticipated. And I'd met up with Gavin Cooper, Riley's partner, sure, on the podcast, the morning before the contest. The first day is actually match play in the afternoon, and then it leads into your actual goes. But I built one of those shoes with him, and it was just absolutely atrocious. I was like, "Wow, it barely even resembled a horseshoe." Because I was trying to do it in that 12-minute time, and I hadn't really practiced, but I kind of got my jitters out for that morning and was able to kind of do well. And so I won my first 3 rounds against other horseshoers, and so I got to keep moving on.
Every round you're doing another horseshoe? So
no, you're building the same shoe every round,
okay,
but you're going against a different person every time.
Oh, boy.
So and it's you're double elimination bracket. Oh, I worked my ass off. It's a crazy 10-minute sprint, 10, 12-minute sprint, because you're hammering as hard as you can while you have heat, and then you've got these weird, just anxious moments while your steel's in the fire heating up. But these fires are rolling so hot. I mean, it takes like 45 seconds to get done. But it's still just like, okay, can I pull it out now? Can I pull it out now? Can I pull it out now? And John's sitting there telling me, 5 more seconds, dude. 5 more seconds. Okay, go.
Oh, my God. And then everyone knows who you are.
Yeah, for the most part.
And in some of your stories, I think it was Gavin who was referring to you as Hawaii 5-0.
Yeah.
Because you were wearing a Hawaiian shirt. And part of me was just like, man, I wonder if that's going to get to him.
I wore a Hawaiian shirt every day. That was my game face. Different shirt. I ran out of them.
How many days were you there?
3.
So what was the point of the Hawaiian shirt, if you don't mind me asking? Because you look great, by the way.
Why not?
Yeah, why not? You're always very stylish.
Look good, do good.
Do good. It reminded me, I don't know if you were, when you were younger, if you were a G.I. Joe man. Did you like G.I. Joe?
A little bit.
At the last thing I remember of G.I. Joe is there was one character, I think he was like, I don't remember what he did. I think he was like he wore camo fatigues and a Hawaiian shirt, and his name was Chuckles. That was the only one I ever remembered, and all I could think of is, you know, you're in there, you got your Hawaiian shirt on, and you're hauling ass. It was amazing seeing you do that. And so on the day that you did the forging the tongs, then making the shoe. How long between making the tongs are you making the shoe? Are you just going straight?
The other part of this whole deal is between you and your striker, you only get to use the tongs you build to build this shoe and to manipulate the shoe in the fire. And so one idea I had that worked out really well was to get a rectangular piece of tubing, and I cut a 1/2-inch slot in it, and that would kind of fit pretty good on that 1/2 inch by 1 1/4 inch steel. So John was able to do quite a bit of the manipulating of the shoe in the fire without tongs, because it didn't have a rivet, so it's not tongs.
Right.
So we figured out a little workaround for that, and that helped quite a bit as far as, you know, him not needing the tongs every 30 seconds to move the shoe around in the fire.
Wow.
But yeah, I mean, as soon as you're done with the tongs, the steel, John already had the middle of my shoe hot whenever I was finishing up the tongs. So as soon as I quenched them, it was on to working on the shoe.
And you'll feel like you need a break or anything like that?
Oh yeah, like... I needed a break, but you don't get it. You only got an hour. So... And I'm not good enough to like take a break.
Oh my God. So what ended up happening with the tongs in the
shoe? So my tongs ended up being the fifth place tongs overall.
Wow.
Which I am just still thrilled to death with. And then my shoe was 11th from last, so I was not bottom 11 or bottom 10, which I'm pretty happy with that. And it would have done quite a bit better had I just taken the 30 seconds to look at it, see if it's flat, and I just plumb forgot. Just rookie mistake, and I can live with it. And so
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, how many people did the tongs?
Everybody had to do the tongs.
Well, like, so 80 people?
Well, everybody in the novices, they do different shoes. They just modify, you know, every go they do, they're just modifying, or no, they're building some, a front plane stamp and a hind three-quarter fuller one day, and then it reverses. So they're not doing this, but there's like 70 people doing it. And amazingly, wow. I've fully expected some people to just not get done with their tongs or to build tongs that were so bad that they weren't going to actually even be able to build a shoe with them. But everybody got their tongs done. Everybody got a shoe built.
Wow.
Which was just really surprising and just good job for everybody, because it was a hump.
Jeez.
And so that put me in, just because of the tongs, I was in pretty good standing that first day. I think I was like 29th.
Wow.
And so the next day we had to build a little hind shoe out of 3/8 3/4 concave, which is some material I'd never worked with before. It's got a weird cross section. It's got a groove down the middle, and then the inside of it is beveled.
Huh.
And when you're hammering it to build a shoe, it's kind of like hammering a noodle. Like things just go directions that you don't want them to go. And, you hammer one side, it dramatically changes the other side, and then it doesn't stay flat the whole time. And so we had to build that, and then this other diagonal weight shoe, which is basically just a novice front shoe with some pieces carved out of it. And I thought I did pretty decent that day, although I started out just out of gas for some reason. I don't think I ate breakfast early enough. And so I struggled the entire time that day. But those shoes did really bad.
Ugh.
But
you must have been exhausted.
Oh. And you know, I'm still not done, because I made it into the live shoeing.
What's that?
So the top 40, they bring in horses, and the top 40, you've got to build this overly complicated specimen shoe. This was a hind preventer. I don't even know what it's for, but I'll have to send you a picture. I don't even know how to explain it. It's just this oddball hind shoe. And then you've also got to build a shoe, measure a horse's foot, whichever foot you just get lucky enough to have. And I had a front left, which whenever I did shoe horses was the only one I liked to do. You've got to measure the foot, trim it, build a shoe for it, nail it on, and you get judged on all of that. And this is the first time I've ever nailed on a handmade shoe. First time I've nailed on a shoe I made, and the first shoe I've nailed on in 7 or 8 years.
So how did it go?
It went better than whenever I was actually doing it.
Wow.
Yeah, it was, I felt really good. Now my specimen shoe, the overcomplicated preventer, barely was recognizable as a horseshoe. I didn't even finish it, and I didn't care. I just kind of did what I could on that, and just between heats on the other shoe that I was building for the horse. But I got it nailed on, and for my first Category 1 contest, I mean, it was just a huge success.
God damn it, I wish I came.
Oh, man, you'd have loved it. You loved it.
Do they do it in Amarillo often? Or
This is the first time, but the guy putting it on is like, we are having you back next year. And the venue was great. Like, we were in a covered open side, like a huge covered open-sided barn. There was vendors there. There's toys for kids to play with. You know, they had a food sponsor for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day. They had a beer sponsor, which is we're not going to get back because we drank entirely too much beer. But yeah, it was a great time. The people that put it on were really happy with us, really enjoyed it. They put it on just fantastically. It was just a really good time. And it was also kind of nice that even though I think everybody in my family thinks it's silly that I'm doing this, my folks got to come and actually see it, see how much work it is, see how much, you know, the practice that I've put in has paid off. It was good.
I'm coming next year.
Ah, you're coming next year.
You invited me this past year, and I couldn't make it this time. I'm coming next year. I got to see you do this. I got to be a support crew.
Yep. We'll make sure Riley's in there too.
Oh, dude. That's unbelievable. You know what? This is the future. This is the future of metalworking. The problem is people just, you know, a lot of these regular, I mean, when I was talking to Riley, I was saying, you know, forging is, there's so many weird little, you know, it's like a foundation and then it all streams off into different areas. Mm-hmm. This is the most, I mean, in terms of like any type of competition, this is the most accurate in terms of the idea of.
And the practicality of it.
Yeah, the practicality of it.
You know, blacksmithing, one of the very earliest parts of it was shoeing horses. And it's,
yeah.
You know, although they know a lot more about the science behind a horse and anatomy and everything like that. And that, so they're like the horses that are shod now are going to stay more sound than they might used to have. It's still doing the same thing. It's taking a chunk of steel, turning it on the horn, putting some holes on it, and nailing it on a horse. I mean, it can't change that much.
It's crazy. It's crazy. And one of the things that I think is kind of the lacking part, and we've talked about this before, and I know it's for you is nothing, but to me it's so fascinating. I love the fact that when they're incising in on the inside for where the nails go, that chisel is specifically to make sure that when you put in the punch the hole, it's to punch the hole for very specific rectangular nails.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's unbelievable. It's like the perfect, you can't use a round nail because it's going to just move around, right?
I think the thing about a round nail is a horseshoe nail is not square. It's the actual nail part that goes into the hoof is rectangular,
right.
And they're directional. You know, there's a little marking on the inside of the nail that goes to the inside because whenever you hammer in a nail, it twists it bends so it
right.
to go outside of the hoof. It doesn't just drive into that hoof wall and stay straight the whole time. It curves once it's going in. It's got a little chisel point on it that which forces it to curve and come out of the hoof wall. And so if you had a round one, I think it would be real easy for it to twist and go kind of funny directions where, you know, maybe you'd end up, it would spin as you're driving it in and potentially go into the hoof capsule, which would be pretty bad.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but yeah, and you know, that fuller that you know, we call in the horseshoeing world, that's a fuller, where, as you know, in the blacksmithing world, that's like a round, long punch is a fuller.
Right.
But there's different sizes, you know, different angles for different nails. You know, a draft one is a little pointier, and one for a more shallow shoes, kind of a little wider because it doesn't have to go as deep. But, I mean, everything is very purpose-built.
Yeah. I never realized that they – it never even dawned on me that the square nail had it had like chisel marks in it to make sure that when it bends in the direction that on going out of the hoof as opposed to going in.
Yep.
Never even dawned on me.
Yeah, and so you put the little design to the inside of the foot, and that makes the nail come to the outside of the foot.
Did anyone ever mess that one up? That would be a pretty
bad mess. I sure hope not.
It'd be a pretty bad mess.
It'd be a pretty bad mess. That'd get you kicked real quick.
Oh, God. That's amazing. Well, you look good out there, dude.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
And I love getting the pictures. You send me lots of pictures of all the tongs you made. What was the hardest part? Would you get let's back it up. Before the event, and you had competed before.
Uh-huh.
Did you get jitters? Are you nervous? Or?
Oh, man. I was shaking like a dog trying to poop a peach seed. Oh, I shake so bad before the match play. And then at least the match, you know, I got a little bit of the jitters out that morning, like I said, practicing with Gavin up there at Wellshod. But then before the actual go, like, I was shaking bad. But then after that, it's kind of nice to have that afternoon of match play to get some of the jitters out before the next morning. And then, so let's see, Wednesday night was match play. Tuesday night, I ran my Tongo. Friday, I did the other go. And so, you know, I came home every night because it's only an hour away. Came home Friday night. I was sitting in my chair just kind of decompressing. I knew I wasn't going to make it to the live shoot. And so I was just kind of taking it easy. And then I get a text from Riley. Dude, you made the fucking live shooting. And then my anxiety skyrocketed. And so I didn't get just a whole lot of sleep Friday night because, like I said, it's been a long time since I've shot a horse. And it's been since never that I had built a shoe that I had to nail on a horse.
That is awesome. So it's like you had to have been, besides nervous, you had to have been pretty proud.
Oh, terribly proud. And the shoe that the horse that I put on that I had to shoe belonged to my buddy Weston. He was one of the guys that supplied horses because you got to have 10 horses. Everybody has a foot. It's 40 people. But it belonged to him, and he basically held my hand. He struck for me that day. It's the only time John didn't strike for me because Weston is a horseshoer, and John is like me, just kind of a hobbyist in this thing. But he held my hand through the whole thing, just really did a tremendous job of walking me through it.
What was your biggest surprise in the event?
Honestly, how good my shoe that I nailed on was.
Wow.
And the other really great part about Weston, and he's Curdog Forge on Instagram, the other great part about shoeing one of his horses is I get that shoe back. And most of the time, you know, these people travel and they don't know whose horses they're shoeing. I really wanted that shoe back. It's the first one I've nailed on a horse, and I'm just glad I'm going to get it back.
Wow.
Because it's going in the trophy case or on the wall or something.
So then when all is said and done and they're giving you the list or giving you your ranking and stuff like that, are you just relieved that it's over or you just want to do it again?
Oh, so relieved. Like, I couldn't handle doing more than one contest a year. I mean, I hadn't made a tool to sell since the winter clinic that they had at the beginning or the end of February. Beginning of February. I've got it, like, the calves on the ranch should have been worked about a month ago. I don't think my marriage would survive if I was all of a sudden getting prepped for the next contest because two of the shoes for the next contest that'll be in June are already out and guys are already practicing for them.
Wow.
And I don't have it in me. It's exhausting.
But you're going to do it next year.
I'm going to do the Amarillo contest next year.
Sick.
One contest a year is all I got in me. I think, you know, and my wife, bless her heart, she has been very patient and very supportive. But if I said I wanted to do the Edgewood contest, she would punch me in the face.
Yeah, I've been there.
And I wouldn't blame
her. I've totally been there. You got to be careful. You know, the funny thing is so how would you train? The funny thing is I'm training for the New York City Marathon, and I got like just about like 29 weeks, 30 weeks into the thing.
Well, the funny thing is whenever like my family is asked, you know, why do you do this? I've said, why do people run marathons? What are you getting out of it?
you got to do. I mean, well, it's a long story for me, but at the same time, it's like I'm also. I had a dream last night that my wife and I were back in college, but we were the same age, and I was meeting with my advisor, and the advisor was saying, well, what are you doing now? Are you going to go study? I'm like, well, I'm going to go home to my girlfriend, who is my wife. And he said, well, you know, when you're in your 20s, you got to be real careful about it. I said, I'm not in my 20s. And he goes, well, when you're in your 30s, I said, I'm not in my 30s. And he goes, well, when you're in your 40s, I said, I'm not in my fucking 40s. I'm 51. So part of it is like, I feel as though you use it or lose it.
Yeah.
And I felt like it's now or never, baby. I did it 12 years ago or 10 years ago, 12 years ago. And I'm like, I'm going to do it again, this time better. And this is the question I want to ask you is now that you've done that and you've got as far as you have, how would you train differently? Because that's what I'm doing. I'm figuring out how to train better for this year.
You know, I'm going to take a little while off from just even building a shoe. Like I said, I've got to get stuff done that make me money, but right. I'll probably, you know, here in a couple months, start building a few shoes ever so often, just kind of stay sharp on it. And I would think that part would be kind of like the equivalent of you just jogging ever so often. It's just, you know, you do it, but I would be like next year, I guess I'm going to have to start running or something, or like jogging, yeah, or riding an exercise bike. Like I need better cardio.
Right.
Because that's where, you know, my hands and my forearms, like they, you get that forearm pump pretty bad.
Oh,
but
it's debilitating.
Yeah. But as much practicing as I've done, like, I don't know what else I could do different for that. So it's just trying to be in better physical shape.
Yeah.
With a lot better cardio. So then whenever I do have time to rasp, like I can really get after it and not just be sucking wind. Horrible. Yeah.
Give yourself more than 2 months of running.
Yeah.
To do that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it really is it's a long, it's it, that to feel better, it's a long stretch.
I feel like if I started, you know, New Year's, or really I ought to start now, but I know I'm not going to do that.
That's, you know.
But, you know, if I started around New Year's and started doing cardio, kind of got back into the workout routine, I think that would just be a tremendous benefit. And other than that, you know, I don't know what else I could do differently, because all of my practice, pretty much every shoe I made, I sent it to Riley, I sent it to Gavin, I sent it to a guy named Austin Edens, Conrad Tro, just these like really good, really accomplished horseshoers that can just pick apart every shoe and just, you know, and everybody's nice about it, and they know, but they do know, like, I want an honest opinion. What do I need to fix on that? So I'd send my shoes off, and then they'd say, well, that's better, but here's what you need to fix. And a lot of the time it's, here's what you need to fix, and here's how you fix it.
Oh, and that's good.
Yeah, and so I would do that, and the next day, that looks better, but here's another thing that you need to fix.
See, this is far more interesting than, like, Forged in Fire.
I think so, too. It's almost like Forged in Fire, but I would say it's even more action and it's more fast paced. I mean, it's an hour to get a shit ton of work done.
But it's also, no, there are no surprises.
No.
That's what's fascinating about it is you can practice the same thing and you're working on your efficiency, not, you know, trying to create some, you know, fictional thing that you're kind of, there's all this peril because you're not 100% sure what it is.
You're majority correct, but the match play, every time on the match play, the final round, which was between a guy named Levick Rosado and Shrek, they always throw a curveball in to the match play for the final round. And this year, you know, we'd been building that roadster and time starts dropping. You know, I think the last one I had to build one in was like in 10 minutes. But they told him, all right, we're going to set the clock at 20 minutes. You got to build tongs. And they gave him lollipops, and whoever's tongs said, you got to build a pair of 3/8 tongs. And Levick was going farrier style. Stan kind of threw a curveball in it. He went with more traditional blacksmith style tongs. And Levick was just beating the pants off of Stan until he got to where he had to size them. And his jaws were just open terribly wide. and he just didn't know how to bring everything back together. And it was a little bit of a bummer to see him lose just because he was big-time underdog. Not big-time underdog, but definitely an underdog to Stan Mullins.
Wow.
And so, actually, last night I went to Welshod for their shop night. I had one last pair of tongs, and so I told John, let's build some match play 20-minute tongs and see how it goes. And at about 16, 17 minutes, like, I was just standing around because we were done.
That's unbelievable.
It match play teaches you what you can get done. Like, I would call match play sort of the forge and fire of this whole deal, because it's super fast paced. You don't know if you have enough material. You don't know if you cut too little material, and you're kind of just trying to build a turd, but a better turd than the other guy.
Hilarious. Hilarious. Yeah. Trying to build a turd, but not the worst.
Yeah, you don't want the worst. It's just got to beat the other turd.
Well, that's what Jonathan Porter used to say. You don't have to be the first guy. You just have to be better than, if a bear's chasing you, you don't have to be the first.
Don't
guy.
Be the slowest guy.
Don't be the slowest guy. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And again, I mean, I know Riley talked about him whenever you had him on. That guy, Troy Woods, he's just a phenom. He is just so unbelievably efficient. Matt Findler, the whole WCB team, Danny Russo, Shrek, they're all unbelievable.
Who's Shrek?
Shrek is Stan Mullins.
Okay.
And he's got the biggest hands I've ever seen, and he kind of just looks like Shrek. And I don't know if he knows that anybody calls him Shrek, but now he's going to find out.
Well, he ain't going to listen to this.
Nah.
Come on. Nah. Don't worry about that. You got to think nobody's listening to this.
Nah, fuck
anyway.
Him if they can't take a joke.
So you're feeling good? I know you weren't feeling very well a couple days ago.
You know, I just got the boy was kind of sick over the weekend, and I just got so run down.
Yeah.
That I don't know. I think I was just kind of fighting off what he had.
Right.
But feeling better now.
And how's everything at the ranch? Good?
It's about to be a whole lot better since now I've got my life back.
Right.
Gonna work calves here in a couple of weeks. Got that lined up. Been going around spraying cedars and mesquites and all that. And yeah.
So business is okay?
Business as usual.
All right, good. Good.
Yeah.
You feeling relaxed?
I am relaxed. Saturday night I was relaxed. Like, it was just done. Just huge sigh of relief. It's over. Yeah. I couldn't do this year round.
And congratulations on the new house.
Thank you.
Excited?
I am very excited. Been, you know, just kind of every day I try to go over there in the evening and just do something, even though work, it needs so much work. Work isn't really going to start on that place until Alex is out of school for the summer since she's a teacher. But I'm just trying, you know, I'm kind of just piddling around trying to do what I can whenever I got just a little bit of time to do something.
Damn.
Mowing, you're shooting rattlesnakes, whatever.
Are you shooting a lot of rattlesnakes?
Shot a couple so far.
So far? Is this a season?
It's early in the season.
Oof.
Yeah, they're out early.
Oof, that's not good.
No, it's not fun.
That's not good.
Constant vigilance.
Well, would you be interested in doing some weird news?
When am I not interested in weird news?
Well, I mean, I wanted to know what you're doing, but I actually, just to let you know, I have a whole sheet, a page of weird news, and I've been starting to categorize them like different things, and I have one section for you.
Is it dicks?
It's Ben Snure stuff.
Oh, I figured it was Ben Snure dick news.
No, there's one dick news in here, but this is we're gonna go straight into some stuff I wanted to save for the next time you were on under Ben Snure stuff.
Let's go to it,
and you can decide if you want to do this, guys. Listen, if you're listening to this, you know Ben Snure is here, and when he's here, we like to catch up. Very excited, but we also like to do weird news because I think that Ben is hilarious, and I really care for his takes on this weird news. I read some of these weird news items to my wife, thinking that she wouldn't care, and she wanted to know more. But I said, "You're going to have to listen to the podcast, and that'll never happen."
And I
that'll never happen. She's just like, what is that? I'm like,
I had to sit through a dinner with that guy. I'm never listening to him again.
No, that's not true. That's not true. All right. First weird news story, and then you can decide if you want to go into it, is UK woman charged with harassment after cyber farting at her boyfriend's ex.
My interest is piqued.
All right. Your interest is piqued. My wish is your desire. Well, that didn't really come out right. All right. So a UK woman charged with harassment after cyber farting at her boyfriend's ex. 25-year-old woman has made history with Britain's first ever cyber farting case. It all started with a video message to her boyfriend's ex-girlfriend. Boyfriend's ex-girlfriend. The wind passer in question proceeded to pass gas by placing the camera on her bottom and passing gas, prosecutor Diane Williams said. The relentless cyber farting began before Christmas and continued through New Year's. The inappropriate and indecently or grossly offensive videos eventually earned Evans a 12-month term for malicious communications. When she appeared in court pleading guilty, she said her actions were done in support of her boyfriend. She suggested she wanted to send videos because she felt her partner was being treated unfairly. It was purely malicious. She was smirking throughout, found it hilarious, but the victim didn't. Not sure how ripping ass into your phone and sending it to another girl is going to emotionally benefit your man, but hey, I respect it.
Man, he's got to stand by her.
He has got to stand by her.
He has got to stand by her.
She was ordered to pay nearly £300 and serve a year-long community order. She has a 2-year restraining order against her, and because she admitted to being drunk while carrying out the crime, she must attend 15 rehab sessions and observe 60-day alcohol abstinence period. Imagine being hearing a prosecutor recall. All right, okay,
man.
Now here's the. So all she had to do is pay €300 or €300.
We'll call it dollars, whatever.
$300. That's light.
Oh, that's nothing.
A year long community order. I guess that's community service for a year. And then 2 years restraining order, no problem. And I think the hardest part is she's got to do 15 rehab sessions.
I can just guarantee you that this could catapult her into some sort of farting OnlyFans, because there's guys out there.
That is a crazy thing. And guess what? We have more farting in a jar stories. But before we get into farting in jar stories, the boyfriend has got to stand by his girl.
If that ain't love, I don't know what is.
that is 100%. You can't get much better than that.
I also want to know, was she clothed or was it like visible butthole?
I don't think so. I have a feeling they would have said that it would have been like indecent. It would have been an indecent situation. I think that she just like farted. It was just noise. I would imagine it was noise.
I'm not mad at her.
Why would you do that? I mean, if you're mad at someone and you're giving, and you know,
I'm mad at the punishment.
Frankly, I got a feeling that she might have thought it was like funsy. Like, it's not a very vicious thing to do.
No.
I mean, that's not the worst. I mean, that is like...
No, I fart in your general direction.
Yeah, I mean, I said it through the phone.
Yeah, you know? It's not like you're having to smell it. Now, if she repeatedly was mailing jars or like doing something somehow where the other person had to smell it. But also, did it say how many farts were sent?
No, I mean, it didn't say exact number, but I'm just assuming it was like a month. It was a month. She said from Christmas to New Year's, which doesn't seem like that's like a week.
Yeah, what is
so
that?
So it couldn't have been that many farts.
8 farts?
I mean, that's a lot.
I mean, the ex-girlfriend, she's just a pussy.
I was going to say, that's some petty shit.
That is petty shit. Police. Grow a sense of humor. Go buy one
somewhere. Would you go to the police for that shit? I would never think to go to the police.
Imagine how embarrassing that is to even report.
Officer, my God.
This woman is farting at me.
You know what? What do you do? Let's just say you're the ex-girlfriend, and then the new girlfriend's sending you farts. Are you just like, why aren't you blocking the number?
That's a good point.
And then who is advising you? Hey, you know what? I got this weird thing. Is my ex-boyfriend's girlfriend is sending me videos of farts. What should I do? I ignore it.
Oh man!
And then
imagine how much fun they had with this in the police station.
You should go to the police.
Yeah, no.
What kind of asshole? That is a pussy shit. That is really some lame.
The
shit.
The farter, she's in the right. I got her back.
The farter has probably made money off this.
Oh, there must have been definitely
like,
can.
Must have been like this because I have another story to bring. Man who makes I'm going to switch to dollars. $20,000 a year from his farts says he's blown away by the demand. Now, this is a dude.
It doesn't matter.
A man who makes thousands of pounds every year from selling his farts can't believe how much demand he's getting. I'm not telling you what his name is on Instagram. You can find that out yourself. I'm not going to make this dude any more money. So, listeners, they're just like, where do I sign up?
Well, I want to know what his name is. I want to see what this guy looks like. Is he you know, a handsome fucker? Or does he look like Fat Bastard?
I'll send you the article, and then you can make a decision. I mean,
I'll say his name for you.
All right, it's fine. All right, so he's the former carpenter from Australia. There you go. Explained that he eats foods that he knows will make him bloated, and ensuring he's able to perform. I specialize in making fart videos. In fact, I make around $3,000 3,000 Australian dollars a month alone. While he started out working as a topless waiter, he began getting more and more popular on social media and doing it on OnlyFans. I don't even really want to read anymore.
Yeah, I see him. With a sweatshirt on, very average looking dude, but he is a ripped son of a bitch. Why, he works out at least once a week.
And he must be farting out like...
A lot of protein shakes.
I just do not get that. You know, the funny thing is like he's the one who should be getting arrested.
I'm with you there. No, the buyers.
The buyers should be arrested. You're right.
Yeah, he might need a fine, but the buyers need to go to jail. Like, you're... what do you do with it? I guess you open it and smell it.
Yeah.
I wonder what kind of container he sends it in, too. Because if you're doing it in glass jars, that's got to get pretty fucking costly. And what's the shelf life of a fart?
Well, but, I mean, obviously, once you open it, I mean, it's done, right?
It's done, but, like, do you say, you know, you get one and save it for a special occasion? Like, you know, it's July, I've got money for a fart, I'm going to save this for Christmas Eve?
And then the other thing is maybe you're just like, you know what, if I'm going to put out all this money for a fart, It better come in a steamy container.
Like, yeah.
I need some physical proof that it was a fart, and I don't want to have to open it.
Yeah, if I'm saving it till Christmas, it better have some green shit growing on the sides of the jar.
What's wrong with
this? Not actual feces, but, you know, I wonder how many people that buy these buy them as pranks.
I don't know what's wrong with us right now. We even do 10 minutes on farts in a jar. I think the bigger issue is the woman who is charged with cyber farting. She should countersue to that woman. That's just outrageous.
I'm with you. I ain't going to fucking rehab for some farts.
No. I ain't going to rehab for some farts. Judge, Your Honor, this is outrageous. You gotta be sending me to rehab for a couple of farts.
$300. Fuck, I ain't paying $300. You know what? Fuck, I would pay. There's been some times in my life I've needed. I'd pay $300 to fart.
Oh, you know what? If it was my girl, I would pay that shit off.
Without a doubt.
Oh, I'd be like, it's on $300. It's on me. Yeah, you're going to have to do the rehab yourself, but the $300, I'm with you.
Now, did you get to see what she looks like?
No.
Okay.
$300? I'm not going to rehab for farting. Yeah.
I also just want to know the thought process of like, man, fuck that bitch. Here's a fart.
I mean, yeah, because to me, it's more like funsy.
I agree.
Like, you're sending videos of a fart, isn't that
offensive? You may not should have said that. Like, you just opened yourself up to some weird shit.
Don't mind.
And it's going to be funsy.
Don't be. Yeah, it's not going to be. You know what?
Don't send Jeff farts, please.
I'm going to send you to jail. I will send you to jail.
Yeah.
I will send you to jail. Next one is this is a great story for that we did before maybe a year ago. You remember the guy who became a dog?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That was actually one of my favorite conversations you and I had. We had two stories. One was a millionaire woman who was eating cat food, and a guy who spent like $10,000.
Like $20,000.
It was a lot of money. And we bred both of them, and then we tried to figure out who was happier.
The
millionaire
was
eating cat food. It was the dog guy. Well, that was the best part. It was by landslides. Well, he's back. Dog guy's back. So man who spent $14,000 to become a dog opens a fantasy zoo with a jaw-dropping entrance fee. The zoo is a brainchild of canine-obsessed YouTuber Toko. A man who spent thousands of dollars to become a dog is now opening up his own, quote, zoo. Yes, the above line is correct. The man paid an eye-watering $14,000 to live out his dream of becoming a border collie. Of course, he didn't actually literally become a dog, but the YouTuber Toko purchased an eerily realistic-looking dog suit to live like a dog, crate and all. But to prove that he was a dog, Toko even took part in agility training course. He did a part in an agility course. Now he wants people to live their best lives, too, as he opened a Japan-based zoo. Taking to Instagram to announce the unusual news, Toko penned in October, "We are opening a zoo where you can become an animal and you can make your dreams of becoming an animal true." I got to pop.
I didn't realize I had those dreams.
Me neither. The post continued, I have had a dream of becoming an animal since I was a child, and I've made it come true in the form of a mascot costume. When I was young, I thought it would be nice if there was a service where you could become an animal. Maybe there's something I can do for people who have the same thoughts. So the unique business venture is believed to now have opened its doors January 26th. As per the site, the only animal option currently available for people to become an Alaskan Malamute. According to Express US, it costs a whopping $250 to hire the suit for morning or afternoon. You have to make reservations 30 days in advance, and there's a warning that people with stiff muscles may struggle to get into the Malamute suit. Malamute suit. Toko's own Border Collie suit isn't available for reservations. This is a pretty good look. This is a pretty realistic looking fucking suit. Let me send this to you.
This has got to be the shittiest zoo ever. Hey, kid, you want to go to the zoo? It's one guy in a fucking dog suit.
This is the shittiest zoo of all time.
I want to go. That is an impressive dog suit.
That I'm real right, right?
Like that's got to be made out of a real dog. That's got to be real fur.
There, it's a real dog. As to why he chose to become that breed of dog, the YouTuber previously revealed, "I chose a collie because of my preference and because I wanted to look as realistic when I made it into a costume. I like animals that walk on four legs, and I especially like cute animals. Among those, I thought it was a large animal was close to us would be a realistic design. I decided to go with the dog. The long-haired dogs can disguise their human body shape, and I chose the collie, which met the criteria of the breed that I liked. So
arrest him.
I mean, 250. I guess it's $250, and you can borrow the suits. So he has these Malamute suits, and he rents them out for $250 a pop.
I guarantee you that those people shit out of that suit like a dog.
Well, they fart at least.
I mean, I guarantee you. Like, it's like those weirdos that put on diapers and get wiped and fed like a baby. Like, if you're gonna do the deal, you're gonna shit in the park like a dog.
Well, I would imagine. I mean, I'm not in the suit renting, the Malamute suit renting business. But I would imagine that if I were in the Malamute suit renting business, there would be some terms of service agreement. And part of that would be you'd have to wear some clothes inside the suit. See, here's the crazy part. Like, I remember when I was a kid, I looked at my cat and I said, "You've got the best life of all time." Like, I remember I was my parents were divorcing. I had to go to school. I was relatively miserable. And this cat just curled up on this warm spot and took a nap. And I thought, for a vacation, being that particular cat for a day would be pretty sweet. That's as far as it goes. Now,
I think everybody's thought that. Or the people I work for, they got the most spoiled dogs I've ever seen in my entire life. And I mean, if you're going to be a dog, that'd be the dog to be.
But to have to put on this suit that's huge and probably cumbersome, and you're probably miserable. I mean,
you'd have to be so hot.
For Halloweens, I've gotten gorilla suits and Yeti suits. I am fucking miserable.
Yeah.
Under those suits. Like, not just the mask, but, like, the whole thing. And I'm not naked under there because that's crazy.
Yep.
But I'm miserable in that suit.
Now, did you buy or rent those suits?
I bought them.
Imagine how many Oh, good. I was going to say,
You can forget. I've never rented a fucking costume before. I bought cheap. The best suit was the Yeti suit because I had a friend, our friend's father dressed up like Gandhi, so I got to hang out with the Yeti and Gandhi. That was great. But the thought of, and I'll send you a picture, that one's unbelievable. The thought of like, I want to relax and become an animal, but I gotta put on this goddamn suit that's heavy. I mean, you look at the suit's unbelievable. It's gotta weigh like
yeah, those Malamutes, those are Alaskan dogs. And if it's made out of real dog, that's a lot of hair. That's a lot of insulation.
It's got to be like 30 pounds, I would say.
And it's Japan. I guarantee you that's a real dog. They don't give a shit.
I don't know in regards to that, but all I can imagine is it's not fun wearing a costume, like a gorilla costume. You can't really see very well. And these are so amazing, you probably can't see at all, and you're probably miserable in there. So your experience is hampered by the fact that you're relatively miserable in this suit.
So you can answer this question. I mean, how bad is it when you fart in one of those suits?
Oh,
like, you're already just marinating in your own juices, then you start stewing in that fart as well.
Yeah.
Ugh.
It's bad.
Ugh.
It's bad. So the $250 probably doesn't cover the cleaning service. Because, I mean, yeah, people are sweating and farting in that thing. And then they're going to give it to somebody else?
I wonder how many takers he's got.
I bet he's got a lot.
I bet he's got like 5 in the repeat.
I bet you. You know what? I bet you. Because he's such a famous YouTuber, people probably just want to get in the suit.
I don't want to get in the suit.
I bet you he's doing a fucking banging business. I bet you he's doing a totally banging. I mean,
I'm disappointed, but I bet you're right.
I'm disappointed too, but I'm just like, here's the other problem. It's like you come up with these business ideas. I don't think a lot of these guys think long term. I mean, maybe that weird kink trend has got like legs in regards to like the business end of like the, you know, like maybe it's not just a trend. Maybe it's something that there is a group of people who want to dress up like dogs. Maybe they just don't, they cover their face when they show up and that's their thing.
Yeah. But he's going to have to branch out. Like, I would think cat would be the next logical step. But then what if you got people that are like, you know, hey, I'd pay $500 to be a grasshopper. I guess you get a grasshopper suit.
But the other thing is like the costume is so expensive that I'm sure if somebody wants to decide to roll around, and maybe they roll around on something that causes a rip, then there's repairs. I'm sure that they have certain like guidelines of what you can and can't do in the dog suit. All of a sudden, it's like a pain in the ass. All I wanted to do is be a dog today. And now I got to put this fucking thing on. I got to pay you $250. You won't let me do anything. I can't shit in this thing.
I can't fart in it.
I can't roll around because I'm afraid I'm going to rip it.
Dead? Like, if I give you an extra $1,000, can you put a dead possum in here for me to roll around on?
No, sir. This is a $14,000 suit. It's going to cost you a lot more to the cleaning product. I'm sure it's a giant pain in the ass. In my mind, if I'm like his partner, a business partner, I have nothing to do with this dog suit shit. And I'm just like, I don't want anything to do with it, but I want the business. The business is going to be brisk. I don't want to have to deal with, listen, Taco, you can't let these people do this, some of this stuff. We have to have rules and regulations. If they're on their knees, they're going to rip in the knees of the dog suit. We can't keep repairing this motherfucker.
So if you're going to the bank for the loan to start this building, do you go in your dog suit? Or do you in dressed as a person?
Oh,
and make your spiel. You gotta go in as the dog.
There's no way they're letting you in. I mean, who would even say? I mean, I wouldn't even. If this is my business, and I'm going to go in the bank. Well, number one, I'm sure he's got a Patreon. I'm sure he's sending farts in jars and he's making up. he's probably, if he's willing to wear the dog suit, I'm sure he's like, you know, sending farts in jars and we're no longer in the bank situation. I think he's probably got a situation going on. But if he's going to the bank, you're going to be talking numbers and a lot less words other than numbers and expectations. You don't have to. That's
maybe,
what the bank
but
wants.
I feel like this guy, like if he's this proud of this and just knows that this is really good, that like there's a lot of money in it. Like you got to go in there and you got to show the banker what they're investing in.
He might be also paying off that suit. I mean, he also might be like his wife or who knows what is probably being like, yo.
If you're dressing like like that all the time, you don't have a wife.
You might be right, but he's got to justify it to somebody. It's not like he's this YouTuber. I just paid $14,000 for the suit, and now, and I got all these fans. Probably he's got a lot of DMs saying, "I want to dress like a dog, and how can I dress like a dog? And can I wear your suit?" And he's probably thinking maybe I can turn this into something where I'm figuring out a ways to pay for my suit.
Let's find out how many YouTube followers he has real quick.
Yeah. You go figure that one out. I have one more diabolical story, but I'm fascinated by this guy. And I think that, frankly, I think that this is very short-sighted. I think this is a short-sighted business plan. If I were this guy, I would be trying to monetize my YouTube instead of dealing with the public. I don't think I'd want to deal with the public, especially you're dealing with this thing that I'm sure some of these people are real kinky.
He's only got 73,400 followers. I was expecting a million.
That's not bad.
No, I mean, it's not bad, but I was thinking like a million YouTube subscribers to watch him, you know, jump over a stick in a dog costume, jump through.
And how many of them are in Japan? See, that's the other thing. All of a sudden, it's a local business. It's not like an internet business. Like, you know what? He might make more money.
Do you think that there's that many people just in Japan? Like, that's got to be a worldwide following.
Yeah, but think about starting a business.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, the zoo is a mistake. The zoo is a huge mistake. He should be sending farts in jars. I think he would probably do better with farts in jars.
I don't know.
I just think, how do you capitalize on this business? You're now also putting a, here I am, officer, lock me up. Hey, Japanese officials who are like mortified by this, I'll be here at the zoo. Come get the butterfly net and take me away.
I've got everybody who comes and visits. I've got their ID and credit card information if you want to kind of track them down as well.
How funny would it be if it just turned into some like just blanket We're trying to take weirdos off the street.
It would make perfect sense to me.
Oh,
like, this
God.
Is their sting operation.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine floating that idea to the chief? Hey, chief, look. Hey, chief, I had this great idea. I feel as though that there are a lot
we're
of
going
weirdos.
To the dog zoo.
We're gonna make a. We're gonna. I'm gonna create this character, and we're gonna create a YouTube following. This is a long game, chief. It's a long game, chief. You gotta trust me.
We're gonna have spend $14,000 on my costume.
Oh God, I gotta bring that up to, you know, the sergeant in arms, and then what we're gonna do is we're gonna get him. Once it's all successful, we're gonna have. Can you imagine that you walk through the door? You ever see those videos where it's like these people who ever I have like a warrant or something like that? They'll get a letter saying
you want a TV.
You want a TV, and they come in and they're rocking and rolling. Yep. And they sign their name. They go to the window. They go to the door. They lock them up. It's the same.
I always love those.
Oh, but if they were all wearing dog costumes, it would be so much funnier. You won. You won the free. You can wear
the free dog costume today. It's your day. Come dress up.
We've
got milk bones.
It's your day. And then you walk through the door. The guy's like, they walk through the door. The guy's like, he's got his paws up like he's begging. And he's making like the panting noise. And then the police officers take his arms behind their back.
Mano.
And they put him away. And then all of a sudden the dog face stops. Like, you're now no longer a dog. You're now a real sad person.
Man, life's going to be like, hard in prison.
Is gonna be, and you're not wearing any clothes under your own costume, so they're gonna put you in that prison. Oh my god,
it'd be so bad. It might be worse if they put you in prison in the dog costume.
Yeah, who is totally the $14,000 dog costume? It's all I have. Do you have any other clothes? No, this is all I got. Well, you're gonna have to go in the $14,000 dog costume.
Dogs don't wear clothes. What are you talking about?
Yeah, dogs don't wear clothes. I hate this story. I'm sorry for him. I think that he's gilding the lily. I think he's pushing this too far.
Oh, totally.
I think that he had a good thing going when he was just doing the dog tricks on YouTube.
No, misery loves company.
To...
You don't want to be a fucking weirdo by yourself.
No, you don't. No, you don't. Now, the last of the diabolical stories.
Yes.
I don't know if you want this one.
Well, let's...
But a biohacker who is de-aging his penis shares seven key methods that he uses to track his penis health.
Now, is this that same fucker who's spending all, like the billionaire who's spending all the money to de-age himself?
Yep.
I would think go ahead. Let's hear this.
I don't like this guy. Every time I see this guy, his name's Brian Johnson, I guess. What a stupid name for him.
He's
a stupid look for a stupid guy.
Yeah.
Biohacker who is de-aging his penis shares several key methods he uses to track his penis health. Brian Johnson's penis is supposedly more than half its actual age, thanks to this wacky method. My man's got a half a his penis is half its age.
Does that
All
mean
right,
it's like less wrinkly? Like it is his ball sack not?
I don't know. Biohacker
like
who is blowing $2 million a year trying to reverse his biological age is trying to rewind the clock on his manhood too. Brian Johnson, 47, clearly believes that you can't put a price on longevity in this life, hence why he's on a mission to override the aging process. The venture capitalist, who dubs himself the world's most measured human, launched his Project Blueprint after suffering a health scare in 2020. On top of that, he had $800 million burning a hole in his pocket after selling his payment gateway company, Braintree Venmo, to PayPal. This motherfucker had Venmo, and he sold it to PayPal in 2013?
Fucking Brian.
Jesus, Brian. And now what are you doing? So he invested his cash into himself. God, these fucking guys are so stupid.
That's too much of a good thing. That's too much money.
God damn, dude. Johnson's been measuring each of the 70 organs in his body to bid a maximal maximally reversed to quantify his biological age. His unique experiment was recently the subject of the new Netflix documentary, Don't Die, The Man Who Wants to Live Forever. Before we get to the penis.
I have to say, I watched part of this.
I haven't. Before we get to the penis, and that's the first thing in a time I've ever said that. Not, I don't feel good about it either. If you gave me a few hundred million dollars, I know exactly what I would do, and it would have nothing to do with this bullshit.
Yeah, I know what I'm not doing.
I know what I'm not. What are you? All right, you got $100 million. What are you doing?
Buying a dump truck.
What are you going to do with the dump truck?
I don't know. Just drive it around.
If I give me $100 million, I'm buying a better house for me and my wife. I'm buying a great studio, and I'm making art and sculpture all the time. I'm not fucking around with my penis.
I'm buying a dump truck, and then I'm buying a ranch.
Yeah, and these are normal things.
That's it.
These are normal things.
And I might keep doing my same job here. I'll just have, you know, I like what I do.
Yeah, these are normal decisions when you have get a lot of money.
Yeah.
Each day, Johnson shoves dozens of pills down his throat and follows a strict diet, which consists of the same food, while his team of medics monitor his progress. A stranger segment of Project Blueprint is the seven-step process to which the entrepreneur from Utah
follows. Hold on a second.
Follows.
I've made $800 million. I'm going to eat the same food every day.
Oh, I'm going to eat whatever I want.
I'm eating everything. But eating the same food every day.
What's your $800 million menu?
Steak.
Okay.
Oysters.
Oh, okay.
You know, maybe some chicken parm. Just, I don't know.
That's pretty good to me.
You know, I just, not a whole lot different than I eat now.
Yeah, see, this is normal stuff.
But imagine having that much money and you only eat the same thing. Just put me in prison.
Should we define? Should we want to know what is the food is?
Yes.
I'm gonna. All right, we lost it. I can't. I can't with this fucking guy. All right. So a stranger segment of the blueprint is a seven step process which the entrepreneur from Utah follows to try to de-age his penis. Johnson claims to be able to lower his erection age by almost half. Thanks to this long-winded ritual, as well as keeping track of his own erection data, Johnson, the fact that his name is Johnson just makes this better. Johnson has been controversially comparing the stats to his 19-year-old son. So he and his son are fucking weird. It's fucking super weird. Super weird. Now, all of a sudden, the dog guys.
Good jerk off session this morning. Me too. Good for us. Good for us. We're both 19.
The dog guy is starting to sound not as weird. The biohacker reckons it's very important information to collect because men with erection problems are 70% more likely to die earlier compared to those without. Explaining why he believes nighttime erections have a huge effect on the health of the bloke's penis, Johnson said it's a classic case of use it or lose it. Thinking of nighttime erections is how your penis works out. All right, okay, erections keep it okay. Without regular exercise, the penis can develop scar tissue over the time, making it harder to get erections. Johnson claims healthy nerves, good blood flow, sleep, high sleep quality, and balanced hormones are essential factors for a healthy penis. So how well does this guy measure? How does he measure how well his little guy is doing? Well, he does semen analysis. This is making
Fuck me
so fucking. I'm fucking sick. Sick of this whole story.
We can't quit now, but
it's.
I feel like it's not going to get any better.
No, it's not. I really let us down a terrible road. This is one might be the worst stories of all time. Next, I'm not going into the semen analysis. Next is a measurement of nighttime erections with a Fitbit smart device which fits around his penis. I cannot believe I'm reading this fucking story. I'm so mad at myself. Guy got a fucking watch around his dick to measure his wiener.
While he sleeps.
While he sleeps. Johnson says this provides an indication of the physiological, cardiovascular, and sexual vascular health. Blood flow testing. An ultrasound is then used for blood flow testing, which measures how much blood is. There are people who have to deal with this fucking guy. That's what's driving me crazy. He's got all the, it's not just data. He's got everyone circling around in like medical outfits looking at his dick. Urine testing. He also tests his urine for max urination speed. Just to let,
how do you test that?
I mean, this fucking guy.
Does he have like a little, like a little wheel, like a little, little fan wheel that he's got to pee on and the faster it goes? Like every time you,
like little...
can you imagine being that fucking paranoid about your health, just your dick health?
He's got a little, one of those little, it's like one of those wheels in a river.
Yeah, yeah, a paddle wheel.
Churn the, yeah, a paddle wheel to churn the power of his stream. Ugh, I'm so mad at myself.
Hopefully he's got, like he's got the little paddle wheel tied into the electric system of his house and he powers his house by urine.
It gets the nightlight.
That's how he charges his dick Fitbit, his dick bit.
His dick bit. Questionnaires on sexual function. This is followed up by questionnaires to score his sexual functions while he regularly measures the size of his prostate. Following, and this is, just to let you know, this guy is not just some, I mean, this guy's a well-known weirdo.
Yeah.
He's not just like, this is some real shit. The sixth step is following core health practices, which describes prioritizing quality sleep, eating a balanced diet, and exercising regularly. And then the final step is prostate health, which follows from the last one. All it is done through a sensor, which provides detailed metrics of penis activity during the night. These result in your adro age, which allows you to track how effectively measuring your penis and erection. Johnson is below 20, even though he's 47 years old. And just to let you know, I feel like I look younger than this guy.
He's weird looking.
He's weird looking.
You don't want to die. You're trying to be just the healthiest son of a bitch that's ever lived.
Yep.
Wouldn't you think if you're just doing that whole thing as just your whole lifestyle, you could probably just assume that your dick's fairly healthy. Like, does he measure like fingernail health? Like, I wonder what age my fingernails are. Where does it stop? Like butthole health?
There's a few problems with this guy. There's a lot of problems with this guy. Number one is he already had $800 million.
Yeah.
So what is his goal for, if you were just some like, you got $800 million, let's just call it $1 billion. Guy got $1 billion. He doesn't have to work for the rest of his life. What are your goals in life? And if it's to be famous, is this really what you
want? No, his goal is to never die. Like, he's trying to live to be 200 years old or older.
Yeah,
it's not going to happen.
But here's the crazy part. You could probably do this in private and get a couple extra years out of this, you know, financially. But I mean, he's putting himself, he's putting himself in this position of being famous. Because I see him on podcasts. Yeah. I see his fucking weird, like, he looks like a fucking shaved possum. His face looks so fucking weird.
It does. It's just like waxy.
You like a possum, right?
And pale. Because he doesn't go outside. And here's another thing. He looks like shit, but he can't ever leave the house.
No.
What happens if he gets hit by a car? Like, what if he tripped and fell into hit his head and fell into his pool and died?
Would that be the most wasteful way to deal with all the millions of dollars you spent on keeping yourself alive if you died in a stupid way?
I feel like that's what's going to happen. He's gonna turn 50 and, like, you know, a meteorite's going to hit him. There's just going to be just some freak fucking weird deal that just happens to people every day. Just an accident happens and you know, he trips and falls with a knife and it goes straight through his heart and kills him.
I'm going to tell you I don't wish this man
anything bad,
obviously, and neither do you. I think that the meteorite is too good a way to go for him. He needs to be like, they strapped on the dick bit too tight, and then all of a sudden there was like some sort of passing out.
Dick gangrene went killed, you know, spread
or something like it's like you know when you give someone the it's like the rear naked choke.
Yeah.
You know the rear naked choke in jiu-jitsu they get the two vaso nerves or something like that that like stops the blood to your brain and you pass out, but if you hold it long enough someone's just going to die. What if he just did the rear naked choke to his dick and he didn't even know it and then that was
I don't know. I've been younger. I've tried that pretty hard and my dick's still attached. I tried pretty hard.
I can't get much better than that. Ladies and gentlemen, you cannot get much better than that. I apologize. I apologize to you, Ben, for leaving that last one. I hate that guy. I don't hate that guy, but I hate the fact that I picked that story. I should have read it. I just
no.
Part of me doesn't want to read these stories because I'm thinking that I'm going to like act too much. I'd rather just, you know. So I apologize.
No,
for
you're
that
good.
Last one.
You're good.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Snoor. One of the best. One of the best. Ain't nobody better than Ben Snoor.
Don't send Jeff fart videos.
Just don't. It's going to be bad if you do. It's going to be really bad for everybody,
blocked.
Including you.
Immediately.
Including you. If you want to do something, support my race in the New York City Marathon. I still got about $2,500 to go. Ben Snoor, ladies and gentlemen, the best. It ain't no much better than that. If you go to wellshod.com, there's going to be a link in the bio here. You can buy the hammers that Ben makes, and you can sell them at Wellshod. Go follow Ben Snoor on Instagram. All the links to where he is, his YouTube page, and his Instagram will be in the show notes here. Ben Snoor, Ben, you're my guy. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you for doing
Thank
so well
you.
In that, and I will be at Amarillo next year with you for that.
Damn right, dude.
You know what I'll do? I'll carry your bags. I'll drive you home so you don't have to drive. You can just sit back and relax. I'm going to be there.
It'll be awesome.
Guys, Ben Snoor. All right, my guys. I will see you next week, Ben. Thank you once
Thanks
again.
Thanks for having me.
You're the best.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.